Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for Friday, December 15th, 2023. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline from today's paper is Trump Delivers His Closing Argument by Tom Barton. Former President Donald Trump continued his swipes at Republican Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds and urged his supporters to show up in force to caucus for him on January 15th and not take his commanding lead in the polls for granted. On Monday, January 15th, we are going to win the Iowa caucuses, and then we are going to crush crooked Joe Biden next November, Trump said in a Commit to Caucus campaign event at the Hyatt Regency Coralville Hotel and Conference Center. Trump holds a 32 percentage point lead over his nearest rival, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, according to the latest state polling. The latest Iowa poll released Monday from the Des Moines Register, NBC News, and Mediacom shows Trump with 51% support among likely Iowa Republican caucus goers, followed by DeSantis at 19% and Nikki Haley, who served as ambassador to the United States under Trump, at 16%. We are ahead by a lot, but you have to go out and vote. The margin of victory is so important, Trump told the crowd of a few hundred gathered in a hotel ballroom. The more we win by, the more we have a voice. We have to put up big numbers. Iowa will hold the first Republican presidential nominating contest in just more than a month. Trump criticized Democratic President Joe Biden for his handling of the economic and border security issues, blaming Biden's immigration and climate policies and electric vehicle incentives for driving inflation, high energy prices, and a surge in illegal border crossings. He touted signing measures cutting taxes and forcing asylum seekers to wait in Mexico while their cases are pending and pledged to boost domestic energy production. During this holiday season, families all across America are struggling under the brutal weight of Biden economics, Trump said. The Biden administration is running on the fumes of the great success of the Trump administration. With your vote, by Christmas 2024, the momentum of our victory will have the U.S. economy roaring back, and 2025 will be one of the greatest economic years this nation has ever recorded. People will stop coming to the border because they know, like just 3 years ago, they won't be able to get through, unquote. Trump promised to conduct the, quote, largest domestic deportation operation in American history, unquote, should he win election to a second term in 2024. Doing so would require building large camps to house migrants waiting for deportation and tapping federal and local law enforcement to assist with large-scale arrests of undocumented immigrants across the country. If elected, Trump said he would also immediately restore and expand a travel ban on entry into the U.S. from Muslim-majority countries and proposed, quote, a strong ideological screening of immigrants. The GOP presidential frontrunner also vowed to protect police from any and all legal liability. I am going to indemnify through the federal government all police officers and law enforcement officials across the United States from being destroyed by the radical left for taking strong actions on crime, Trump said. Critics argue doing so would prevent individuals from holding law enforcement accountable for abuse and misconduct. Trump also continued his relentless, unproven claims that the 2020 presidential election was rigged and claimed Biden had weaponized the Justice Department against his chief 2024 rival, who faces indictments that amount to more than 90 felony charges. Trump has been indicted by federal grand juries composed of average citizens following investigations that included witness testimony and a trove of evidence over his alleged mishandling of classified documents. The former president, who faces felony charges over efforts to overturn the 2020 election, groused that his indictments took years, claiming they were politically timed and intended to torpedo his candidacy. He also reiterated his disapproval of Reynolds' endorsement of DeSantis. Reynolds initially pledged to remain neutral in the Iowa caucuses. Trump continued to take credit for Reynolds' election victories in 2018 and 2022 and cites a Morning Consult poll showing Reynolds' approval rating was at 49% and her disapproval at 47%. The latter is the highest number in the nation, making her, quote, America's most unpopular governor, unquote, according to Morning Consult. Reynolds, however, remains popular among Republicans in the state, with 81% viewing her favorably, according to an August Iowa poll. Reynolds outperformed the Republican 2024 field, including Trump, who was rated favorable by 65% of likely Iowa caucus goers. Trump on Wednesday also gave a shout out to Iowa punter Tory Taylor, who was in the crowd. He's going to make a lot of money. I wish I was his agent, Trump said, calling the Australian-born Hawkeye football player a beautiful, big, strong physical specimen. Trump asked if Taylor was from Iowa. You're from Australia? Well, we'll adopt you, he said. And he is part of Central Casting. He's going to be a great one. Anastasia Mwenkamkaba, 23, of Iowa City, was among the couple of hundred people who waited in line to hear Trump speak inside the hotel ballroom. The Kirkwood Community College student studying criminal justice plans to participate in the Iowa caucuses for the first time on January 15th. Mwenkamkaba said she's undecided which candidate she'll support in the caucuses, but that Trump is at the top of the list, followed by DeSantis. Quote, someday I want to work in politics as well, and I just want to see how everything is run and encourage other young people to get involved in politics as well, Mwenkamkaba said. Because the way our country is running, it doesn't seem like everything is going as it should be, unquote. She cited inflation and a perception of worsening crime across the country. Violent crime across the U.S. decreased last year, dropping to about the same level as before the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, but property crime rose substantially, according to data in the FBI's annual crime report released in October. She said her family is in need of a new car but cannot afford it due to increased housing, food, and other living costs. I'm a full-time student and trying to afford house, a car, and other stuff. Like, we can't do that right now, she said. Mwenkamkaba said she also liked Trump's America First approach to foreign policy, trade, and national security that centers on reducing U.S. trade deficits and for the U.S. to become less involved in foreign matters. I feel like when Trump was in office, the country was pretty calm, Mwenkamkaba said. It was divided, but people felt like they were safe and they had the money to put food on the table. She said she's not concerned about Trump's multiple criminal indictments and does not believe there's enough evidence to support his prosecution. That despite surveillance video, text messages, and other communications unearthed by efforts by Trump and his allies to overturn the 2020 election results in Georgia. Trump faces criminal charges that include conspiracy to defraud the United States and witness tampering. I feel like they're looking for anything to charge him with anything, Mwenkamkaba said, but I don't feel like that really reflects on his leadership. Dan Reitinger, 43, of Bettendorf, said he plans to support Trump in the caucuses, partly because of his perseverance and ability to continue on in the wake of multiple criminal prosecutions. It's also about the economy and the border, Reitinger said. Asked if Trump calling his political opponents vermin, who he will root out, reigniting criticism that the former president would abuse his power to seek retribution against his rival, and news media if he returns to the White House, Connie Dowling, 67, of West Des Moines, shrugged and said, "That's Trump. That's just him. That's how he relates to people," Dowling said. "That's just him. He speaks off the cuff. It doesn't bother me." Twice during a town hall on Fox News last week in Davenport, Sean Hannity asked Trump to say that he would not abuse presidential power and retaliate against his political opponents if elected next year. Both times, Trump declined to give an outright denial. Iowa and national Democrats note Trump has continued to double down on his call to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Doing so, they argue, would mean tens of millions of Americans will have their health care coverage endangered, and as many as 135 million Americans with pre-existing conditions could be subject to discrimination from insurance companies. It's just a shame that Donald Trump is once again putting this MAGA agenda ahead of the needs of Iowans, and it really is important to understand that repealing the Affordable Care Act would devastate Iowa, Iowa Democratic Party Chair Rita Hart said ahead of Trump's campaign stop. Hart and California Democrat U.S. Representative Ami Bera, a physician, also attacked Trump for his support of abortion restrictions as women across the country grapple with a patchwork of tightening restrictions. It comes days after the Texas Supreme Court overturned a lower court order allowing an abortion for a pregnant woman whose fetus was diagnosed with a fatal condition. The lawsuit is believed to be one of the first attempts in the country by an individual seeking a court-ordered abortion since conservative Supreme Court justices appointed by Trump helped overturn federal abortion protections last year. Now, this is also from the front page. Satanic Temple display at Capitol sparks controversy by Caleb McCullough. Iowans touring the state capitol this week will see two displays, one installed by the Satanic Temple and the other a nativity scene, that have sparked a debate about free expression and religious liberty. The Satanic Temple, Iowa, a chapter of a national organization, installed a display last week that features a statue of Baphomet, a goat-headed figure often used to represent Satan. The display also features seven tenets upheld by the Satanic Temple and is set to remain up until Saturday, according to a calendar maintained by the Department of Administrative Services. The Thomas More Society, a conservative law firm, installed a nativity scene in the state capitol on Tuesday that will remain for 2 weeks. Images of the Satanic Temple display circulated on social media last week and sparked calls for the state to remove it, including from at least one Republican state lawmaker. Others argued the display is religious expression protected by the First Amendment. In a statement on Tuesday, Iowa Republican Governor Kim Reynolds said she disagrees with the display but implored opponents to engage in speech and prayer rather than remove the display. Like many Iowans, I find the Satanic Temple's display in the Capitol absolutely objectionable, Reynolds said in a statement. In a free society, the best response to objectionable speech is more speech, and I encourage all those of faith to join me today in praying over the Capitol and recognizing the nativity scene that will be on display, the true reason for the season. In a statement on Monday, the Satanic Temple, Iowa, said it was proud to take part in the holiday season at the state capitol. The tenets portrayed on the statue, the group said, advocate for bodily autonomy, a rejection of arbitrary authority, recognizing our own fallibility, and inspiring nobility in thought and action, which we hope enlightens the viewer to our beliefs and inspires one to reflect upon their own approach to the world. We thank the staff of the Capitol Police, and the Department of Administrative Services for holding fast to the principle of religious freedom and ensuring all religions have an equal opportunity to celebrate the holidays together in our beautiful Capitol, the group said in a statement. The Interfaith Alliance of Iowa, a liberal advocacy organization, said in a statement on Tuesday that Reynolds' comments about the display were disrespectful to people who are not Christian. Quote, the governor of Iowa may be Christian herself, but in this democracy grounded in religious freedom, she is not a Christian governor, Connie Ryan, the group's executive director, said. She should never elevate one belief above all other beliefs. She is accountable to every Iowan. She should promise to do better and to inclusively represent and uphold the freedoms of every Iowan, regardless of the political influences to do otherwise. Unquote. Republicans differ on legal response. In a newsletter on December 8th, State Representative Brad Sherman, a Republican from Williamsburg, said he disagreed that the satanic display was protected free speech and called for Reynolds to remove it. He pointed to the Iowa Constitution, which states that the people of Iowa are, quote, grateful to the Supreme Being for blessings hitherto enjoyed, unquote. He said that clause implied that the state law was founded on a Christian interpretation of God, and Iowa must depend on God for continued success. Quote, it is a tortured and twisted interpretation of law that affords Satan, who is universally understood to be the enemy of God, religious expression equal to God in an institution of government that depends upon God for continued blessings, unquote, he wrote. Sherman further called for legislation to state that satanic displays are not allowed on state property, and legislation allowing the display of the Ten Commandments in the Capitol and school buildings. State Representative John Dunwell, a Republican from Newton, said he did not support the satanic temple display, but that it should remain up in order to ensure that religious freedom was protected. The divide represents a rift in the Republican Party between Christian nationalists, he said, and those who think the government should not privilege any religion. Quote, as an American and as a politician, my number one concern is freedom, he said in an interview Tuesday. I do not want the government telling me what's an appropriate religious display and what is not an appropriate religious display. Because if they can do that against something that I find objectionable, at some point that same government can do that to me, unquote. In an event commemorating the nativity scene on Tuesday, speakers made frequent reference to the satanic temple display nearby, though none called for the display to be taken down. Reynolds attended the ceremony, but she did not speak. Ahead of the ceremony, on Tuesday, Barb Chapman of Urbandale was praying in front of the satanic temple display. She said she was not opposed to the display being up, but that she was praying for the people involved to change their views and become Christians. I don't hate them for it. I'm just sorry that they don't know the love of God, or I don't think they would oppose him, she said. Mike Damastis, the pastor of Fort Des Moines Church of Christ, said he thought the display was installed to poke the bear and offend Christians, and that the display was not in line with Iowa's cultural tradition. While he does not want the display to be up, he said he does not know whether it can be legally taken down. My gut feeling was I wanted to come and tear it down personally, he said, but I also need to be a law-abiding citizen. Now turning to page 3, Defense Bill Authorized by Kevin Freaking, Stephen Groves, and Lisa Mascaro. Dateline Washington. The House passed a defense policy bill Thursday that authorizes the biggest pay raise for troops in more than two decades, overcoming objections from some conservatives concerning that the measure did not do enough to restrict the Pentagon's diversity initiatives, abortion travel policy, and gender-affirming health care for transgender service members. The $886 billion defense bill was approved by a vote of 310 to 118 and now goes to President Joe Biden after the Senate overwhelmingly passed it Wednesday. It is likely the last piece of major legislation Congress will consider before leaving for the holiday break. Lawmakers departed Washington on Thursday without a deal to pass wartime support for Ukraine, even as Biden's administration raced to negotiate with Senate Republicans who demand changes to U.S. border security policy in return. The Senate planned to come back next week in hopes of finalizing a deal to place new restrictions on asylum claims at the border and pass the $110 billion package of aid for Ukraine, Israel, and other national security needs. But the House showed no sign of returning to push the legislation through the full Congress. Thursday's spending bill represents about a 3% increase from the prior year. The bill serves as a blueprint for programs Congress will seek to fund through follow-up spending bills. Lawmakers have been negotiating a final defense policy bill for months after each chamber passed strikingly different versions in July. Some of the priorities championed by social conservatives were a no-go for Democrats. Negotiators dropped them from the final version to get it over the finish line. That did not go over well with some Republican lawmakers, though most voted for a bill that traditionally has broad bipartisan support. Most notably, the bill does not include language sought by House Republicans to restrict gender-affirming health care for transgender service members, and it does not block the Pentagon's abortion travel policy, which allows reimbursement for travel expenses when a service member has to go out of state for an abortion or other reproductive care. Republicans did win some concessions on diversity and inclusion training in the military. For example, the bill freezes hiring for such training until a full accounting of the programming and costs is completed and reported to Congress. Now turning to the Digest column, older Americans to pay less for some drugs. Hundreds of thousands of older Americans could pay less for some of their outpatient drug treatments beginning early next year, the Biden administration announced Thursday. The White House unveiled a list of 48 drugs, some of them injectables used to treat cancer, whose prices increased faster than the rate of inflation this year. Under the Inflation Reduction Act, drug makers will have to pay rebates to the federal government because of those price increases. The money will be used to lower the price Medicare enrollees pay on the drugs. For years, there's been no check on how high or how fast Big Pharma can raise drug prices, President Joe Biden said Thursday. Let's call this for what it is. It simply is a ripoff. They're ripping off Medicare. They're ripping off the American people. Now we're fighting back. EU leaders fail to agree on $55 billion aid for Ukraine. Dateline Brussels. European Union leaders failed to agree on a $55 billion aid package for Ukraine and on the renegotiation of the EU budget, EU Council President Charles Michel said late Thursday. The financial package could not be endorsed by all 27 leaders, who earlier Thursday agreed to open membership negotiations with Ukraine. The money is aimed at helping the war-torn country weather the Russian invasion. The EU decided earlier Thursday to open accession negotiations with Ukraine, a stunning reversal for a country at war that struggled to find the backing for its membership aspirations and long faced obstinate opposition from Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban. Now, briefly, the Giuliani case. Jurors began deliberating Thursday to decide how much Rudy Giuliani must pay two former Georgia election workers for spreading lies about them that led to a barrage of racist threats and upended their lives. 2024 ballot. The Michigan Court of Appeals said Thursday it won't stop former President Donald Trump from appearing on the state's 2024 Republican primary ballot, rejecting challenges from critics who say his role in the 2021 Capitol attack disqualifies him under the Constitution's insurrection clause. Mortgage rates. The average long-term U.S. mortgage rate dropped below 7% to its lowest level since early August, mortgage buyer Freddie Mac said Thursday, another boost for prospective home buyers. Santos seat. Republicans picked Nassau County lawmaker and former Israeli paratrooper Mazi Pilip as their candidate against Democratic ex-representative Tom Suozzi in a February 13th special election to replace ousted New York Congressman George Santos, party officials said Thursday. And e-cig seizure. U.S. agents recently seized more than $1.4 million deliberately mislabeled and illegal e-cigarettes valued at $18 million from overseas manufacturers, including the Chinese company behind Elf Bar, Food and Drug Administration officials said Thursday. You are listening to the reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for Friday, December 15, 2023, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. There are no obituaries, so we will turn directly to the sports page. Now on the sports page, under a big picture of Trey Tucker, celebrating a 30-yard touchdown, we have this story. Raiders flipped the switch on their offense in record rout. 4 days after being shut out, the Raiders scored 6 first-half touchdowns on their way to the most points in a game in franchise history, blowing out the Chargers 63-21 Thursday night in Las Vegas. Receiver Trey Tucker celebrated his 30-yard touchdown reception from Aiden O'Connell in the first quarter with a big flip and was one of 8 Raiders with a touchdown, a feat last accomplished by the 1950s LA Rams. In NFL notes, the title is Watt Will Play Against Colts. Dateline Pittsburgh. A few days in concussion protocol did not slow down TJ Watt. The Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker says he feels great and expects to play on Saturday when the Steelers visit Indianapolis. Watt reported concussion-like symptoms last Friday, the day after taking a knee to the face mask from New England running back Ezekiel Elliott on the first play of what became a 21-18 loss to the Patriots. He left for a brief period before being given the okay to play. The perennial All-Pro said he had stuff going on when he reported to the team facility the next day. He returned to practice on Tuesday and was cleared by an independent neurologist Wednesday night. Watt, whose 14 sacks are second in the NFL, added a tinted visor to his helmet for the majority of the New England game. He declined to get into specifics about the decision, pointing out that he's worn a visor during pregame and during practice, adding that it's not something that's new for me. Watt also laughed when asked about the tests he underwent before getting cleared to return against New England. "We can break down every little thing that I do," he said. "I think it's funny how things get caught on camera when you could do things other times that aren't on camera. So I'm not going to get it all in the specifics and into a debate about it. I'm focused on this week and the Colts." Vikings Madison, O'Neal, out, Jefferson questionable. The Minnesota Vikings have ruled running back Alexander Madison and right tackle Brian O'Neal out of their upcoming game at Cincinnati because of ankle sprains. Wide receiver Justin Jefferson was listed as questionable Thursday on the final injury report of the week with a bruised chest that forced him out of the previous game. Jefferson said he plans to play Saturday against the Bengals. David Quisenberry took over for O'Neal when the injury sidelined him last week in the 3-0 victory at Las Vegas. Madison was also forced out of the game, putting Ty Chandler in the lead role in the backfield and moving Kenny Nguagu into the mix for carriers. Right guard Ed Ingram will return to the lineup after a hip injury held him out against the Raiders. Steelers defensive coordinator Terrell Austin said the team does not plan to put any restrictions on TJ Watt if he is available. League making more progress in diversity hiring. The National Football League continues to make incremental, widespread progress in its diversity hiring practices, according to an annual report. Thursday's report card from the Institute for Diversity and Ethics in Sport at Central Florida gave the NFL an overall grade of B+, which is the highest mark for the league since the study began in 1988. The league received a B+ mark for racial hiring and a B for gender hiring. Among the highlights, there were 9 general managers who were people of color at the start of the 2023 season, 30% of the league. Also, the overall percentage of people of color who have an NFL assistant coaching position rose to 43.6%, which is up from last year and has improved from 31.8% in 2013, which earned an A+ grade. Next is Flacco signs deal with Browns. Joe Flacco's officially signed and sealed with Cleveland. He's already delivered. Flacco got a 1-year, $4.05 million contract loaded with incentives on Thursday from the Browns, who brought in the veteran quarterback last month while in emergency mode after losing starter Deshaun Watson for the season with a right shoulder injury. The team elevated Flacco from the practice squad in each of the past 2 weeks to start games against the Rams and the Jaguars. Prescott, Crosby, Mack among Rooney Award finalists. Dallas Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott, Los Angeles Chargers three-time All-Pro edge rusher Khalil Mack, and Las Vegas Raiders two-time Pro Bowl edge rusher Max Crosby are among the eight finalists for the 9th annual Art Rooney Sportsmanship Award. Each NFL team nominated one of its players for the award, which recognizes those who exemplify outstanding sportsmanship on the field. The other finalists announced Thursday are New York Jets linebacker C.J. Mosley, Baltimore Ravens guard Kevin Zeitler, Arizona Cardinals safety Budda Baker, San Francisco 49ers fullback Kyle Juszczyk, and Seattle Seahawks linebacker Bobby Wagner. Packers Jones has broken thumb, Dateline Green Bay. Packers running back A.J. Dillon has a broken right thumb and is not clear whether he'll play Sunday against Tampa Bay. "We're just taking it day by day, just trying to see how I'm feeling as it's going, and stuff like that is moving forward," Dillon said Thursday. The injury occurred during the Packers' final drive in their 24-22 loss to the New York Giants on Monday night. And briefly, the Jaguars. A 31-year-old former Jacksonville Jaguars financial manager, accused of stealing more than $22 million from the NFL franchise through its virtual credit card program, pleaded guilty to federal charges Thursday and faces up to 30 years in prison. Jones. Former NFL player Adam Pac-Man Jones reached a plea agreement on a disorderly conduct charge Thursday after he was removed from a plane before takeoff at the Cincinnati Northern Kentucky Airport in September. Jones was sentenced to 30 days in jail as part of the deal, but that time is suspended as long as he has no unlawful conduct at the airport for 2 years, according to media reports. Honors. Emmy Award-winning actor and producer Keegan-Michael Key will host the NFL Honors Show on February 8th when the Associated Press individual awards are announced. The primetime honors special will air live from Resorts World Theater in Las Vegas. Now turning to college basketball, the top 25, number 7 Marquette denies upset bid of St. Thomas. Dateline Milwaukee. Oso Higodaro scored 21 points. Tyler Kolak had 12 points and 10 assists, and number 7 Marquette hung on to beat St. Thomas 84-79 on Thursday night in the Golden Eagles' final game before opening Big East competition. Kolak went 6 of 6 on free throws over the final 1 minute and 3 seconds to seal the victory. One night after UNLV upset number 8 Creighton and Chicago State shocked number 25 Northwestern, Marquette got all it could handle from a Summit League program in its third season in Division I. The Golden Eagles, who were a 25.5-point favorite according to FanDuel Sportsbook, led by 1 point with 3 minutes left, and the Tommies kept it competitive until the final seconds. Drake Dobbs scored 14 points, Kendall Blue, 13, Ben Now, 12, Carter Bjork, 11, and Parker Bjork-Lund, 10 for St. Thomas. Cam Jones had 13 points, Chase Ross, 11, and David Joplin, 10 for Marquette. Number 23, Wisconsin, 75, Jacksonville State, 60. Steve Crowell had 19 points and 9 rebounds. Tyler Wall added 16 points, and Wisconsin beat Jacksonville State in Madison. Wall scored the first 8 points for the Badgers, who bounced back from a lackluster performance in Saturday's 98-73 loss at number 1, Arizona. Wall went 6 of 9 from the field in the first half as Wisconsin led 38-30 at the break. Kai Tandy scored 16 points for Jacksonville State. Marcellus Brigham Jr. came off the bench to score 10 first-half points for the Gamecocks, but he didn't score after halftime. A.J. Storr had 13 points for Wisconsin. Crowell capped a 12-3 run with a layup that gave the Badgers a 29-17 lead with 5 minutes and 39 seconds remaining in the first half. Jacksonville State's Ivan Reynolds drained a half-court three-pointer at the first half buzzer. The Gamecocks then scored the first two baskets of the second half to get within 38-34, but Wisconsin held Jacksonville State scoreless for the next 4 minutes. The Gamecocks finished 6 of 15 from three-point range. Now we have baseball notes. Ohtani dodges Tommy John surgery questions at introduction. Dateline Los Angeles. Shohei Ohtani opened his first news conference with the Los Angeles Dodgers by dodging questions about whether he had a second Tommy John surgery. "It was a procedure. I'm not sure what it was called," Ohtani said Thursday. Speaking to media for the first time since August 9th, he also refused to say what other teams he negotiated with before the agreement last weekend on a record $700 million contract. "I just can't wait to join the team and get it going," he said. Ohtani wore a navy business suit with a white shirt and a blue tie and took off the jacket and put on a Dodgers home jersey with number 17 and then the blue cap with the interlocking L and A. He took off the cap before speaking. He was impressed when Dodgers officials told them they considered the last decade a failure because the team won only one World Series title. An electronic sign flashed, "Welcome to the Dodgers, Shohei Ohtani," in English and Japanese above the stage. Ohtani thanked Walter, team president Stan Kasten, Friedman, general manager Brandon Gomes, and manager Dave Roberts. "Shohei is arguably the most talented player who has ever played this game," president of baseball operations Andrew Friedman said, flanked by Ohtani and controlling owner Mark Walter. "One of our goals is to have baseball fans in Japan convert to Dodger Blue." A unique two-way star as both a hitter and pitcher, the 29-year-old Japanese sensation left the Los Angeles Angels as a free agent after 6 years. He's moving 30 miles up Interstate 5 after the Dodgers won out over the competition by offering $700 million, a 10-year contract, in a deal announced Monday. Not long after Ohtani wrapped up his press conference, the Dodgers were back on the phones to continue adding to their team. Los Angeles acquired starting pitcher Tyler Glasnow and center fielder Manuel Margot from the Tampa Bay Rays on Thursday night, ESPN's Jeff Passan reported. The Rays will receive Ryan Pepiot and Johnny DeLuca. Passan noted the deal is contingent on Glasnow signing an extension with the Dodgers, something he's expected to do. Glasnow, 30, spent the last 6 seasons in Tampa Bay. He finished 2023 by going 10-7, with a 3.53 ERA in 21 starts. Ray says potential name change could nix stadium deal. Dateline St. Petersburg, Florida. They began as the Tampa Bay Devil Rays in 1998, then shortened their name in 2007 to simply the Tampa Bay Rays. Now, as plans for a new ballpark take shape, there's talk about changing the name again to reflect the team's actual location, the St. Petersburg Rays. The St. Petersburg City Council debated the possibility Thursday, ultimately voting for a resolution seeking options to elevate the city's prominence with the Major League Baseball team that could include a name change. Councilmember Gina Driscoll said she brought the idea forward because many constituents think Tampa Bay really just means the city of Tampa. "I think we owe it to our residents to have a discussion about this," Driscoll said. "It is not something the Rays want," team co-president Brian Ault told the council, suggesting such a requirement could torpedo the entire $6.5 billion ballpark and downtown redevelopment project that includes affordable housing, a Black History Museum, a hotel, retail and office space, bars and restaurants. "We are the Tampa Bay Rays. Our name is deliberately inclusive. Our fans live throughout Tampa Bay and Central Florida," said Ault, noting that other local professional sports teams are the NFL's Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Tampa Bay Lightning of the NHL. There will not be a new ballpark nor development project if there's a requirement to change our franchise's name. The new $1.3 billion ballpark unveiled in September would be located on the same 86 acres of tract of downtown land where Tropicana Field now sits. That domed stadium, which the Rays have called home since 1998, would be demolished. The deal would lock the Rays into their new home for at least 30 years, beginning in 2028, ending speculation the team would move to Tampa or perhaps another city. Lee finalizes deal with Giants. Dateline San Francisco. South Korean outfielder Jung-Hoo Lee and the San Francisco Giants finalized a $113 million six-year contract on Thursday. Lee has the right to opt out of the deal after four seasons and $72 million to become a free agent. He gets a $5 million signing bonus and salaries of $7 million next season, $16 million in 2025, $22 million each in 2026 and 27, and $20.5 million apiece in 2028 and 29. Lee is to be introduced at a news conference Friday at Oracle Park. Kershaw doing really well after surgery. Clayton Kershaw said he is recovering well after recent shoulder surgery and has yet to decide where and when to sign his next contract. The three-time Cy Young Award winner is a free agent after signing one-year contracts each of the last two seasons with the Los Angeles Dodgers. "I'm excited to get back after this surgery and throw a ball and have it not hurt," Kershaw said Wednesday night in an interview on the KLAC Radio's Dodger Talk show. The 35-year-old left-hander said he and his wife Ellen are still in that process of deciding his next move. In Game 1 of the NL Division Series against Arizona, Kershaw retired just one of eight batters and allowed six runs. Brewers acquire Clark from Royals. Dateline Milwaukee. Right-hander Taylor Clark was acquired by the Milwaukee Brewers from the Kansas City Royals on Thursday for minor league pitcher Ryan Brady and infielder Cam Devaney. Clark, 30, went 3-6 with a 5.95 ERA last season in 56 relief appearances and two starts. He struck out 65 and walked 24 in 59 innings. Also on Thursday, the Royals finalized their $45 million three-year contract with right-hander Seth Lugo. Lugo gets $15 million each season and can terminate the deal after 2 years and $30 million. Lopez Mets finalized contract. Dateline New York. Relief pitcher Jorge Lopez and the New York Mets finalized their $2 million one-year contract on Thursday. Lopez gives the Mets another experienced arm as they rebuild their bullpen depth with low-cost castoffs. The right-hander pitched for three playoff teams last season, going 6-2 with a 5.95 ERA and three saves in 61 relief appearances for Minnesota, Miami, and Baltimore. And briefly, obituary. Ken McKenzie, a left-handed reliever who was the only pitcher with a winning record on the expansion, 1962 New York Mets, died Thursday. He was 89. And Rangers. Texas signed free agent pitcher Tyler Molly to $22 million, a two-year contract with the right-hander expected to miss the start of the 2024 season coming off Tommy John elbow surgery. Now turning to the NBA, Wednesday's results. New Orleans 142, Washington 122. Philadelphia 129 and Detroit 111. Toronto 135, Atlanta 128. Miami 115, Charlotte 104. LA Lakers 122, San Antonio 119. Houston 117, Memphis 104. Milwaukee had 140 points, Indiana 126, Brooklyn had 116, Phoenix 112, and Utah beat New York 117-113. Thursday's results. Chicago 124 over Miami's 116, Boston 116 over Cleveland's 107, Minnesota 119 over Dallas's 101, Denver 124 over Brooklyn 101, Sacramento 128 over Oklahoma City 123, Utah 122 over Portland 114, and the LA Clippers 112 over Golden State 113. Friday's games: Detroit at Philadelphia 6 p.m., Indiana at Washington 6 p.m., New Orleans at Charlotte 6 p.m., Atlanta at Toronto 6:30 p.m., LA Lakers at San Antonio 6:30 p.m., Orlando at Boston 6:30 p.m., Houston at Memphis 7 p.m., New York at Phoenix at 9 p.m. And Saturday's games: Detroit at Milwaukee 5 p.m., Philadelphia at Charlotte 6 p.m., Atlanta at Cleveland 6:30 p.m., Chicago at Miami 7 p.m., Indiana at Minnesota 7 p.m., Brooklyn at Golden State 7:30 p.m., Dallas at Portland 8 p.m., Oklahoma City at Denver 8 p.m., Utah at Sacramento 9 p.m., New York at LA Clippers 9:30 p.m. Then this story: double-double by Tatum lifts Celtics to 12-0 at home. Dateline Boston. Jason Tatum scored 27 points. Jaylen Brown had 22. And the Boston Celtics beat the Cleveland Cavaliers 116-107 on Thursday night to improve to 12-0 at home, facing the Cavaliers for the second consecutive game at TD Garden after a victory on Tuesday. Boston won for the sixth time in seven games overall. Kristaps Porzingis added 18 points. Jrue Holiday had 15, and Derek White 14 for the Celtics, who have the best record in the Eastern Conference. Tatum added 11 rebounds, and all five starters scored in double figures. Donovan Mitchell paced Cleveland with 31 points. Caris LeVert finished with 26, and Darius Garland had 19 for the Cavaliers, who have lost three straight. Timberwolves 119, Mavericks 101. Naz Reid scored 19 of his season-high 27 points in the first half. Karl Anthony Towns had 21 points and a season-high 17 rebounds, and Minnesota shook off an early 15-point deficit to beat host Dallas. Luka Doncic had 39 points and 13 rebounds for the Mavericks, whose four-game winning streak ended. Bulls 124, Heat 116. Kobe White scored 26 points. Ayo Dosunmu scored 24 points off the Chicago bench, and the Bulls ran out to a huge lead before hanging on to win at Miami. Nikola Vucevic finished with 24 points, 12 rebounds, and 7 assists for the Bulls. White had 11 assists and 7 rebounds, while DeMar DeRozan scored 23 for Chicago. Nuggets 124, Nets 101. Nikola Jovic became the first NBA player with at least 10 triple-doubles in seven straight seasons as host Denver beat Brooklyn for its third consecutive win. Jokic had 26 points, 15 rebounds, and 10 assists in his 115th career triple-double during the regular season. Jazz 122, Trailblazers 114. Colin Sexton scored 27 points. Simone Fontecchio had 24, and Utah won at Portland. Talen Horton-Tucker added 23 points for the shorthanded Jazz, who were without All-Star forward Lauri Markkanen, as well as John Collins, Jordan Clarkson, and Keontae George. Clippers 120, Warriors 113. James Harden had 28 points. Kawhi Leonard scored 27, and host Los Angeles defeated Golden State for their sixth straight win. Around the NBA, Bucks Pacers tussle over milestone ball. Dateline Milwaukee. Giannis Antetokounmpo exchanged heated words with members of the Indiana staff and raced toward the Pacers locker room Wednesday night as the team squared off in a hallway in a dispute over the game ball following his franchise record 64-point performance. After the Bucks' 140-126 victory, Antetokounmpo had an animated discussion with Indiana star Tyrese Halliburton and other Pacers before rushing from the court toward the Indiana locker room in search of the ball. The Bucks wanted the game ball for Antetokounmpo. Indiana coach Rick Carlisle said the Pacers took the ball for Oscar Tshiebwe, who scored his first official NBA point. That led to a confrontation between members of the teams in the arena hallway. Afterward, there still was confusion over who had which game ball. One video appears to show the actual game ball being collected by a member of the Bucks staff. Carlisle said the Pacers apparently had a reserve game ball they took after the game. Bucks guard Cameron Payne said he was one of the players who went down the tunnel. And in the briefly column, Warriors. Golden State believes Draymond Green needs help to curb his history of rough play, and general manager Mike Dunleavy Jr. is hopeful an independent suspension provides enough time for their star forward to make real progress. And obituary, George McGinnis, a Hall of Fame forward who was a two-time ABA champion and three-time All-Star in the NBA and ABA, died Thursday. He was 70. And the stat of the day is 11. The Houston Rockets won their 11th straight home game Wednesday with a 117-104 victory over the Grizzlies. The streak is the longest since a franchise record 20-game streak from January 10th to April 5th, 2018. Now turning to hockey. Brink scores winner for surging Flyers. Dateline Philadelphia. Bobby Brink scored the deciding goal in the shootout and also tallied one in regulation to lift the Philadelphia Flyers to a 4-3 victory over the Washington Capitals on Thursday night. Sean Couturier also scored in the shootout for the Flyers, who have won 5 of 6 and extended their points streak to 7 consecutive contests. Owen Tippett and Joel Farabee scored in regulation for Philadelphia. Brink came from a sharp angle in the shootout, then decked past Capitals goalie Charlie Lindgren before the easy finish into the empty net. Dylan Strome and Tom Wilson each had a goal and an assist, and Connor McMichael also scored in regulation for the Capitals. Blue Jackets 6, Maple Leafs 5 in overtime. Kent Johnson scored his second goal of the game at 3 minutes and 26 seconds of overtime to give Columbus a road victory over Toronto after the Maple Leafs overcame a 5-goal deficit in the third period. Patrick Laine, Justin Danforth, Yegor Chinnikov, and Johnny Gaudreau also scored for Columbus, and Elvis Merzlikins made 43 saves. Austin Matthews scored Toronto's final 2 goals to break a tie for the NHL lead with 23. Hurricanes 2, Red Wings 1. Jordan Staal broke a tie midway through the second as Carolina won at Detroit. Jack Drury also scored for Carolina, and Pyotr Kochetkov made 25 saves. And that does it for today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for Friday, December 15th, 2023. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.
Are you among the millions of Americans living with chronic pain? If so, you may think prescription opioids are the solution. The truth is, the benefits of opioids are limited. Opioids only mask the pain. Opioids also come with serious side effects, ranging from nausea to withdrawal symptoms to overdose. As many as 25% of people who are prescribed opioids struggle with addiction. And those who are addicted to opioids are 40 times more likely to move on to heroin. No one wants to live in pain, but no one should put their health at risk to be pain-free. There is another choice, physical therapy. Physical therapists treat pain through movement and exercise, no warning labels required, and you get to be an active participant in your care. Choose to treat your pain safely. Choose physical therapy. Visit moveforwardpt.com to find a physical therapist near you. This public service announcement is brought to you by the American Physical Therapy Association.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. A decade ago, there were typically 20 earthquakes a year that were large enough to feel in the central and eastern U.S. But in 2015, there were over 1,000 of them. Why? It's mostly because we're pumping more water into the ground. The boom in U.S. oil and gas production over the last decade has brought many more oil wells, which also produce water. Most is naturally occurring in the formation, and some was injected by operators to allow or improve the recovery of oil and gas. In both cases, the water will likely have picked up salt and other minerals from the rock, making it many times saltier than seawater. Operators may re-inject this water to continue to liberate oil and gas. But more often, there's too much to handle. So it's trucked or piped to disposal wells, where it's pumped down into deep saltwater reservoirs. Adding large volumes of wastewater increases the pressure in these rock formations, which can allow natural faults to slip more easily than they normally would, causing earthquakes. To address these quakes, regulators and the petroleum industry are monitoring disposal wells and shutting down those that could cause damaging seismic activity. And they now think that managing wastewater injection more carefully should help. There's still more work to be done, and university research centers, like the Bureau of Economic Geology, are conducting major studies with the aim of minimizing the risk of earthquakes while maintaining the benefits of domestic energy production. For Earth Date, I'm Scott Tinker.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.